The Sunday Morning Linux Review, starring Mary Talmadge, Tony Venus, and Matt Anders as the Beaver.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This is Tony Bemis.
Matt Anders.
And Mary Tomich.
And this is episode 114.
Triskaidekaphilia or Peggy.
Triskaidekaphilia all the way.
That's right.
Yeah, whether you like it or you don't.
That's right.
Well, if you don't, it would be triskaidekaphobia.
Hey, but I, for one, like the number 13. It's my favorite number. It's the day I was born on in the month of September. So,
all right.
And the reason why we thought of Peggy, well, before we started, Matt tried to peg out the audio, which really didn't take
Wasn't
much.
Hard.
And I think we had originally talked about Peggy, and that was because
yesterday we had our aborted show.
And there was this little thing. It's out on the outermost ring of Saturn. There's like this little anomaly, little object or something, and so they. The Cassini project, which manages the that satellite that's orbiting Saturn, or at least out in that region of the solar system, they've called it Peggy for whatever reason. So anyway, but it's Triskaidekaphilia.
All right.
All right, Tony. Now that we got through that, oh my gosh. So
yesterday we tried to do the show, and the internet just as we started. Mm-hmm. It was like we were about to go, and then all of a sudden the internet stopped.
Yep. And right as soon as we said, okay, let's go live, bang, no internet.
Yeah. I think that was by design.
I don't know.
But what ended up happening is there was some kind of problem, and Comcast had to reinitialize the entire account. We upgraded to Xfinity. Mm-hmm. So instead of just flipping the switch and saying, now you have Xfinity, they had to wipe out our old modem
and put
the new
modem,
or re-add the modem.
Oh, the new configure.
Oh, okay.
The new config.
So when you try to get on, at that point, then it says you have to set up your Comcast account.
Oh my. Okay.
So about 20 minutes after we decided to stop the show, I got it fixed and it was ready to go. But it's good. We're running now.
Yeah, and I really didn't have much room for error anyway because I had my little patrol thing.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I have to be to work at 10 o'clock, so.
Yeah, it wouldn't have worked by that point, so. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, but the other thing I did this week is I upgraded to OwnCloud 6.
All right.
Yeah, I saw your postings on Google Plus. You were pretty excited about that, and I thought, I bet we're going to hear about it.
Yeah, it works
so
pretty cool.
So, do share.
They have new color schemes. So,
ooh, color schemes.
And new icons.
Well, that's really the reason why I would upgrade.
But the biggest thing they added was the ability to edit your ODF docs. And for
other people to edit,
like you share it, and then you mm-hmm. can both be editing at the same time.
So how does it...
Well, doesn't it just use LibreOffice, or do they have a built-in ODF... editor?
It's a plugin that somebody created. I don't mm-hmm. know who created it or...
So it's kind of a versioning, it's really a versioning program?
Well, it's like Google Docs.
It's like Google Docs.
I don't use Google Docs.
It's where multiple people can be in there and editing.
Right.
And it gives little colors next to that line
right.
that the person's editing. So
everybody gets their own color. Everybody gets their own color. At work, we use Google Docs.
Oh,
and
really?
So then everybody gets their own color. And when
That's
someone
so
makes an
insidious.
Edit, you can tell who made it. You get by the edit they make is the color that they are, and up mm-hmm. here it lists them and their colors.
That's so insidious.
Why?
Because Google comes out with all these cool tools for free just to sell.
Oh, no. Them. If you're a business, you have to pay for it. It's not free.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, did you have to pay for yours, Tony?
It's OwnCloud. No.
It's OwnCloud.
He runs
it.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I've used Google Docs, but it was personal. So there's no charge for personal
yeah.
user.
Individuals and schools get to use Google Docs for free. Like I said, I've set a couple of schools up with Google Docs accounts, mm-hmm. and they get to do it for free so other students and teachers can then use the collaboration.
All right.
But businesses, when they use it, have to pay.
Okay.
So it's pretty cool.
Excellent.
Yeah. And I don't know, that's about it. Well, I found out that my one router's dying.
Yeah, we did find that out.
Yeah, it reboots about once a minute.
Yeah, we were.
So I got to figure out.
A little Android app was a Wi-Fi analyzer we were looking at, and we would see it come up, and we'd see it go away, and we'd see it come up again.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a mess.
Luckily, that's my secondary one, the one that we have down here. So I just cranked up the strength on the one upstairs, and then we can still get on down here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had no problem today. So.
Cool.
All right, so let's see, what did I do? I better open up my document that says what I did last week. Oh, you're kidding. I mean, you're laughing. A couple weeks ago, I think I mentioned I had gotten this range extender router or whatever, you know, for this wireless thing for my house.
Was it a range extender or?
Yeah.
Because a range extender is not... doesn't do any routing or anything. It just grabs the signal and passes it on.
Yeah.
Rebroadcasts it.
Right. And that's what it does. I misspoke. It's not a router. It's a range extender device. How's that? Does that work better? Anyway, so I put that in place and it is working well. And I do get a better signal upstairs now when that thing's running. So I just connect to it and it works great.
Well, didn't you have, wasn't one of your networks the access point upstairs?
Yeah, I do.
Because you have the multiple networks in your
house.
Right.
I have two. I kind of, just because I work from home and I don't want to be without.
Right. You want to have redundancy. I understand.
Yeah. But this connected to the one downstairs, the one that we use for hangout when we record at my house. So,
right.
Yeah. So it works well. And then, another thing I did last week is I kind of did a semi deep dive into ZFS tutorials. So, and I want to say that if anybody is interested in kind of getting a good familiarity with ZFS, is to listen to the last release of BSD Now podcast, because they spend, I think, at least a half an hour with examples going into all of the setup when you want to create a pool. You add data sets, you do this, that, and the other thing.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
I'm going to have to check
Alan
that out.
Alan Jude, who is one of the podcasters on that podcast, in addition to Chris Moore, did it. And I will confess, I had a little tablet there. I took some notes just so that I could
have
them.
You mean with pencil and paper?
Yes, I did. I know. Shocking,
ooh,
isn't it?
You didn't have like a text editor open and just take notes the normal way?
Well, no. Well, the problem is I had it on the screen, so, you know, I only had one screen, so
right,
I wanted to
watch
it.
But you don't have to give the whole screen to the podcast. I'm sure it wasn't a lot of visual information.
True, but I like multimedia. So, but anyway, I heartily recommend it if you're interested in finding out more about it. I'm going to go back and review my handwritten notes and maybe watch it again just to get just to refresh my
mind. I write a lot of stuff down too, like at work and stuff. Mm-hmm. Guys bust my balls. They're like, just put the note on your phone. I'm like, fuck that. I can write it right here way faster. Fire up the app. Unlock my phone. Fire up the app.
Exactly. There are just times where just jotting it down in a little notebook or something is far.
Right, because I just got to have it till I get to the data center. It's like row, rack, and use space is what I'm writing down, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah, and I agree. You know, when I'm on the phone, I have to write down all my notes because I'll start talking back to the person and I'll forget their name. Or I'll forget something that they said, so I'll make little notes as I'm talking to them.
Yep, I hear you. I know exactly what you're talking about. So, yeah, so that's a couple things.
I don't talk to people on the phone.
Yeah, we noticed, Matt.
I even forgot my phone. It's at home.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. What are you going to do?
Go to work and have an enjoyable evening.
All right. Well, anyway, so that's a couple of things I did this week.
All right. So, Matt, what'd you do this week?
Mr. Matt?
Nothing.
Oh, that usually means something.
Nothing I can talk about on air.
Wow. All right. Well, we expect a debriefing after the podcast ends.
Matt, what's happening with the kernel?
We have no release candidate. The main line remains 3.13-RC3. Our stable updates on Wednesday, the 11th of December, 2013, at 22:50 Pacific Standard Time. Greg Kuhartman released kernel 3.4.74 with 29 files changed, 142 lines inserted, 189 lines deleted. I'm sorry, only 89 lines deleted. on Wednesday, the 11th of December, 2013, at 22:51 Pacific Standard Time, Greg Kohart released kernel 3.10.24 with 74 files changed, 456 lines inserted, and 256 lines deleted. Then also on Wednesday, the 11th of December, 2013, at 22:51, Greg Gorman released kernel 3.12.5 with 84 files changed, 676 lines inserted, and 297 lines deleted. And I have no kernel developer quote of the week.
All right.
They were mum?
Or you just... I just didn't think any was worth... Because I like to find a humorous one, and they're all kind of serious this week.
Oh, okay. Well, that's probably a good thing, I guess. And that's the end of the kernel news?
That's it. I told you, sir.
Wow. You are so right.
Do you guys want another?
Another what? Beer?
Yeah, I'll have another one.
Just like the other one.
You want that?
No, you can.
I can. I'm going to work.
All right.
And they're going to have to deal with me.
Yeah, what we're consuming this evening, for anyone who, any brew aficionados, is Short's Brew. It's Pandemonium Pale Ale.
Pandemonium Pale Ale.
I thought
of
you when I saw the Pale Ale, and that's why I got it.
It's good. It's fairly good. It's a little old, though.
Yep.
But that is not, like...
The end of the world.
Yeah.
It's still drinkable.
It's consumable, but a little old.
I have a tendency to pick old beer.
Not as old as that one time. Oh, my God.
Yeah, that was bad. That was bad.
All right. And you know what we're using to open them now? Is you can't see it on the camera, but it's
trying to poison me. What the?
I think that was the one that had all that goo on it. Here,
there's stuff all over it. Yeah, by the way, that's what Matt's complaining about. But there's Mary got us a Slackware
Christmas present for the show.
Yeah, a Slackware bottle opener.
So
very cool.
All right, Matt has the cleanest beer bottle down here.
No,
now.
It's not.
Oh. All right.
It's still quite filthy.
Okay. Well, I guess what we're going to probably do is proceed on.
Tony, what's going on with the Linux distributions this week?
On the 7th was released PC Linux OS 2013.12, which Bill Reynolds has announced it, that the release.
On the 11th? Did you say?
On the 7th.
On the 7th?
What was it?
I only go back as far as the 12th. So.
I'm sorry. Do you need some assistance, or do you need do you want me to weigh in on this?
Sure.
What we need, I think you're absolutely correct, PC Linux OS.
Yeah. I know, Matt, what are you looking at where it stops?
That's the DistroWatch main page there. It's dialed and it goes back as far as the 12th.
I think that's... That's the Fedora version.
Fuck you.
Hey.
Yeah, did you hear their latest release is called the Hindenburg?
The Hindenburg.
Oh, no, wait, it's Heisenberg.
Yeah.
Okay. That was a little Fedora joke. I love Fedora. No hate mail, please. All right, so I we're going to get serious now. See, this will always, you know, when we record on Fridays for the Sunday Morning Linux Review, we always kind of get crazy.
Yeah. Well, they said this is the holiday update of PC Linux OS.
Yes, it is.
And they have the KDE.
He's so professional.
Mini-Me, LXDE, funny. Mate, and the full Monty.
Yes.
Well, I'll have no input until we get to Kanama on the 12th.
All right. We covered them last week.
They just came out on the 12th. We couldn't have covered them last week.
Oh, you know what? It's the bug fix release. But let me tell you, some people may not realize this, especially people who don't use PC Linux OS, but they've got a magazine, and
really?
I think it's a monthly magazine, yep, and it's called PC Linux OS Magazine.
Shocker.
A shocker. Newsflash. But anyway, their December issue was released, and they've got some good... what I really like about this magazine is that they've got some good practical things for just... kind of regular everyday users. Things like, for example, GIMP tutorial fixing a photo, which I think could be very helpful. LibreOffice tips and tricks. They've got the creating the ebook version of PC Linux OS Magazine, so that if you want to take it with you and read it on ebook, you can. They also have got Let's see. Another thing they have here is why virtual Windows installation beats dual booting. So I have to confess, I didn't read that yet because this just came out.
And I keep a. This is what I'm like tonight. I'm using my work.
Which do you prefer? Do you prefer to dual boot or do you prefer a virtual?
Well, dual boot, no.
No, yeah, I prefer the
and
virtual.
And I do, like, this is my work machine, so sometimes I need a Windows install for some of the stuff we do. And so I have
are
a Windows virtual
you
machine
could
on here.
So you're saying you could boot right up into, is it what, 7?
Yeah, Windows. Okay. Actually, I think I use XP.
Oh, okay.
I use a Windows 7 VM on mine, and I use it for work also.
I only have 4 gigs of RAM on here, and 7 takes too many resources. I can't do anything in the regular
OS. You only need about 2 gigs of RAM for Windows 7.
Mm, for some reason, some of the stuff I'm doing in it
is it Java apps you're running? Yeah. That's why, because Java sucks.
Yes, Java does suck.
I'm running a Linux virtual machine on my BSD machine.
Okay,
we just got back on track. So anyway, but that just a couple comments about their magazine, so check it out.
All right.
Excuse me.
On the 11th, we have Sparky Linux.
Sparky.
3.2, LXDE, Ultra, and Razer QT.
Hey, Tony.
Yes.
No. Oh, I'm sorry. What?
Draggle says he's not getting any video.
Did you tell him that's probably a good thing? We're kidding.
I'm not sure what to do because it looks fine on our end.
All right, then. I'll repost the link.
Yeah.
Because he came in after it was posted.
All right.
Oh, I didn't put it in the...
Oh, that's probably part of the problem.
Yeah,
well,
that's
why
he doesn't
have
the video.
I'll go ahead and talk a little bit. I'll talk a little bit about Sparky. Sparky Linux. Did I tell you that Sparky was the name of my cockatiel when I was younger?
No.
Sparky. Okay. Well, it's also the name of a Linux distribution. They have got, at least on this release, and it actually may have appeared earlier, but for sure it's on this release, it's called Sparky Aptus, or AptUS. It's a small, lightweight front end for AppGet. So you can use it to upgrade, install, remove packages, you know, just like your typical AppGet commands, and you're able to do that from the convenience of a GUI front end. I waved too just for the heck of it.
just to show
I could do two things at once.
That was for Peter 64.
Can you pat your head and rub your belly?
Yeah. Look at that! I just turned it right off. All right, was that a setup? Okay, I fell for it. But anyway, I just wanted to mention that about Sparky.
Cool.
Oh, and by the way, too, that Aptus or AptUS, I apologize for not really knowing how to pronounce it. Isn't that so often on a Linux podcast? They've got these interesting names for things, and then there's the requisite apology about...
Cool names.
Well, it could be cool. I said interesting just so that I wouldn't offend anyone, but some of them are just crazy. But anyway, they've added a new option to this little AppGet front end, and it's called Fix Broken, so that if you've got broken packages or something like that, you're able to do it also. So who knows? It could be a nice replacement for Synaptic someday. Synaptic. So, all right, we're moving on.
Cool. Yeah, so next up we have, I don't know, what is next?
Tails.
Yep, Tails 0.22, which is a Debian-based live CD for incorporating Tor technology and anonymous browsing.
Don't tell.
Right.
just in checking their release notes and some other things on their site, one thing that they've done on this release is they are providing, or at least the distro is providing, a clearer warning now when the persistent volume is deleted. So that's probably good, so that you just don't blow it away by mistake. They also shared, I thought it was kind of candid of them to share, some of their known issues, and one of them is the unsafe browser cannot connect to the internet. That might make it safe. But anyway, they also have the keyboard shortcuts use QWERTY mapping instead of AZERTY mapping, I guess, on French keyboards, and that may prevent people from going to some websites. No, just kidding. But, they've got a few other little known issues.
Don't they use the AZERTY keyboard in France?
Yeah, they do.
But the French keyboard in that distro has QWERTY mapping instead of.
Yeah, that's
AZERTY.
The keyboard shortcuts, just the shortcuts, not the whole mapping itself. So they said it's a known issue. I think it's going to be fixed in the next release because they very conveniently provide a roadmap as to what's going to be available in the next release, which is, I believe, scheduled for January 21st. And that fix is supposed to be included. So anybody who's kind of used to using shortcuts will have to wait about a month or so. And, excuse me, it'll be available. So.
All right. Cool. And the last one on our list. Oh, no. We have two more left. Next one is Makalulu Linux.
Yeah.
4.0 KDE edition.
There's a lot more than four left. You haven't done any at all on the page I'm on.
That's because most of them are development.
I really think you're on the wrong page, Matt.
Well, wait a minute. There's Tails. When did you do Canarum? This one. When did you do Kanama?
Last week.
It's the 12th. It just came out. Oh, no. Never mind. Do you see what I was doing now?
12.6 or 12.2?
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have to sit between. Actually, Tony, I'm sorry. I don't even mean to drag you
in. Oh. I was reading the month as the day.
Oh, that's... I'm looking at you, and it's funny because I can now see your screen. And I'm looking at that, and I'm thinking, well, there's Dodo, which we did last week, and it's below it. God, I could, Tony, we could have made money on this. Bad, I tell you. I'm sure we'll get through this.
Eventually.
See, the fun thing, Tony, is you and I get to relax after, so he's got to go to work.
Right.
All right, we are going to continue with... This distro list, if it kills us.
Yeah.
All right, so what was next?
Makula.
Oh, Makulu. Yeah. Makulu.
Makulu. And what's interesting...
A little hippo.
...is they had a release...
Not a pig.
That's right. We talked about it 2 weeks ago.
Do you realize he's just slamming you there?
What's interesting, though, is their release 2 weeks ago was 4.3,
mm-hmm.
and their release today is 4.0.
What?
Yes.
We're in the Makulu time.
Wow.
We're going backwards.
Yeah, Makulu goes backwards. They started at 12.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense to me.
I think.
Oh, wait, maybe 4.3 is because of XFCE last time.
On their site, they do wish everyone a Happy New Year. Merry Christmas. So, all right. I'll have to look at that Makulu Linux one of these times.
Why?
because it's a Linux distro. It's kind of interesting.
All right.
Okay, well, let's laugh our way through the next one.
The last one on the list is Gparted.
Oh, that's pretty serious.
It's 0.17.0-1, mm-hmm. which is also a Debian-based live CD that's made with tools for disk management and data rescue.
Yes. Actually, my company uses a ticketing system called Spiceworks. Or not my company. Our little group does. I don't know if you ever heard of it.
Uses what?
Spiceworks.
Yes.
And what I like about it is that I can always see, the IT community is really, they really are a community. And so if somebody from one company or one group has a question, they can post it to the Spiceworks community. And so the only ones I'm ever interested in are the ones that are the Linux ones. And so somebody today had sent us a system that the drive, one, I think one of the drives of which they wanted to increase or double up to, like 24 terabytes or something. It was this huge amount.
What file system are they using?
Because
that's going to matter.
I think it was EXT4.
Then they can't make a file system that big.
No, I think it was. Okay. I have no idea for sure because I wasn't, I wasn't paying that much attention. But anyway, it was kind of interesting to read, and I'm thinking, one of these days I'm going to know the answer to one of these questions. But the reason why I say that is because he wanted to check something on it, and he's learning Linux, he said. So somebody responded and said, oh, you could try Gparted. It'll show you really quick. And he said, Richard, I'm learning Linux, and I prefer to do it at the command line. So I thought, well, there's doing it that way, or there's getting the thing done.
CFdisk. If he wants to see a quick overview, mm-hmm. either fdisk-l or will just show you what's going on, mm-hmm. or if you want to see it in an interactive mode, CFdisk has an ncurses type environment that it dropped you into.
I think that's what I wasn't. Didn't we talk about that a few weeks ago? CFdisk.
We did.
Yep. Because I used that, I thought, on one of the reviews. And I remember Slackware had a nice package manager. Or not package manager. Well, it did, but I mean, this was a partition manager. So, All right.
Well, we're going on to
talk that one to death.
We're going on to the top five of the week.
And Dattle does suggest that the RHEL 7 beta might be a good thing to talk about, because they're doing some nifty stuff with their RHEL 7 beta. The most significant thing that they're doing that I am way in favor of is they're going to MariaDB.
Oh.
They're dumping MySQL and going to MariaDB with RHEL 7.
All right. Well, he also says that XFS is going to be the new default.
Is it really? I did not know that, Donald. Yeah.
XFS?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Interesting.
I haven't really seen much. I've heard of it, but I haven't really seen anybody use it.
I didn't think it was that widely used at all.
Well, they're so cutting edge.
All right. Well, let's go on to the top five of the week.
And we have got a very interesting list on the top five, in my opinion, this week.
Yeah. So at number five, we have Debian with 15...
I have Magia.
Then maybe you should...
1682.
No, 1676.
See, number five. You're behind me. You did not refresh soon enough.
Number five?
Yeah.
I have Debian at 1632.
When's the last time you refreshed?
10 seconds ago. Yeah, rapid key clicking is mad.
Right.
That mouse clicking is mad.
Are you ready now?
I told you it was Debian at 1584.
That's right, and it's trending up.
I can't believe it changed that much, because I did it like when we were getting ready is when I did it.
All right. Number four is Magia with 1676. And they're trending down.
Yeah.
Number three is Ubuntu with 1699.
And trending down.
And number two spot is PC Linux OS with 2002.
And trending down.
And in the number one spot is Mint.
Gotta love that minty goodness.
With 4157.
And trending down.
Well, normally we do a distro review, but I think last week Matt and I entered into a...
Yeah, we're going to do a trade-off.
An agreement where every other week I'll do a review, and Matt will do some kind of server thing.
My server thing is SAR, but I'm typing in the chat right now, so if somebody wants to fill...
Oh, yeah.
That would be good.
I will. All right. So I think it's going to be kind of interesting that, Matt, you'll be doing this each week.
You know,
was that for Phil?
While you're typing, I have a new project that I want to turn my Raspberry Pi into. I still want
to
do XBMC with it. It's a video thing.
Yeah.
But have you heard of Ambilight? Ambilight. It's on some of the new TVs. They have mm-hmm. lighting that reflects off the back, so that like whatever's on the edge of the TV, it reflects that light off the back, so it makes it seem bigger and more
so you're gonna,
inclusive in dark
make
rooms.
Make your TV look bigger with the Raspberry Pi using Ambilight?
Well, what it is, the Raspberry Pi, you can run a strip of LEDs around, and then the Raspberry Pi will control those doing Ambilight stuff. So, yeah, it's really cool.
I bet you could probably control Christmas lights with a Raspberry Pi. I think they've done that, haven't they?
Well, yeah, some of those light shows that people set up, I'm sure have used the Raspberry Pi.
Yeah, sure. And actually, they were showing this the stripping that you can buy. They run it outside on the houses and stuff, and in, it's controllable. Individual LEDs are controllable, and you can run it.
I saw a picture the other day.
Like that?
It was the best whole house Christmas decoration.
Oh, yeah?
It was one string of lights up on the gutter, and it was falling down here like this, and it was a statue of the Grinch taking them down. Done! Whole house decorated! Because the Grinch is taking them back down!
Oh, that's hilarious. That's
that
very
is
good. That's very good. That's very good.
All right.
So if we're ready, which I'm ready now.
All right.
We're going to talk about SAR.
And what is SAR, Matt?
SAR is... You know, I don't know that it stands for anything. I don't know if it stands for anything.
Server alphabetic release.
Let's see.
He's trying to help. All right, Alf, you need more fill?
Maybe. I'm defining SAR now.
Hey, but so some of us who don't really work with servers all the time, you know, maybe I'm the only one. But I just thought it would be good to know. So...
I'm trying to search for it, and apparently you can't type starch instead of search.
You can't what?
In apt cache, you have to type search instead of starch if you want to find
SAR
an app.
SAR server. There we go.
What is the package? How do you install
it? It's in SysTat. It's part
System
of
Activity SysTat. Reporter.
Thank you very much, Mary.
Who's doing the review?
So it's System Activity Reporter. And what it does is it
reports on systems.
Well, no, yeah, it compiles a whole bunch of statistics of what's going on with the server at regular intervals.
Okay.
So that then when your server starts freaking out, you can then go back and look at the SAR data that it's collected.
Oh,
and
okay.
Try and figure out what was going on.
So it's like an event viewer, kind of?
No. Just like memory statistics and I/O statistics.
Oh, I see. Okay, not events.
Like
it's just a kind of conditions or states.
Sure.
Okay.
So, the SAR utility collects ongoing performance statistics on your system to allow for troubleshooting when things go awry. The SysStat package contains the SAR utility along with other useful utilities. This article is going to focus on the SAR utility. You can use SAR to monitor the following system information: collective CPU usage, individual CPU statistics, memory used and available, swap space used and available, overall I/O activities of the system, individual device I/O activities, context switch statistics, which I do not cover because I don't understand that.
That's all right.
Run queue and load average data, network statistics, which I don't cover because I use another tool for network statistics, and to also get SAR data from a specific time in the past. So first we have to install and configure the SysStat package, then set it up to monitor our system. To install it, you would either do yum install SysStat or apt-get install SysStat, whichever method, or whatever method preferred by your distribution.
I used apt-get, by the way. And there's two S's in SysStat. Did you know that?
Yes, sys and stat.
Yeah.
And after installation, you can run the command SAR-V, and it'll tell you the version. The most recent stable version is 10.2.0, released on 11/3/2013. The version in Fedora 19 is 10.1.5, and the version I'm using in my examples is... And then I have the output from the... It is 9.0.4.
9.0?
Because that's the current version on CentOS.
Oh.
And did you know BSD has it? It's called BSD SAR.
Is it part of the SysStat package on BSD?
I don't know. I just found that little piece of information. You keep talking, I'll keep looking.
Okay.
Ubuntu has 10.1.6.
Oh. Okay, Nature Abhors a Vacuum.
So Ubuntu has got a slightly newer version than Fedora. I'm shocked.
By one release point, or bug fix point.
Yeah.
Well, that's what we've been saying all along.
Yeah. So now we have to set it up to gather statistics on an ongoing and regular basis. We do this with a cron job. You'll need to create a file in the etcicron.d called sysstat. And below is a copy of the cron we use at work to run SAR regularly. It is, the first one would be, run the SA1 script every 10 minutes. So it would collect the data every 10 minutes. You can set this to whatever you want. Mm-hmm. And I'll have this in the show notes along with all of the examples also, because I'm not going to read the output from my examples. I'm just going to
tell you
what the command I run. And so the first when you set it up, we collect the data every 10 minutes. Some people prefer every 5. And then it also will give you a summary, and we run that summary every day in the 53rd minute of the 23rd hour of the day. So, and that uses the SA2 script.
Hmm.
Under CentOS, the SA1 and SA2 live in user lib64/SA. If you're using another distribution or installing from source, it may be different, so consult your documentation. The first entry collects data every 10 minutes. I already said that. And this
so if you wanted to just launch it, and or maybe I'm getting a little ahead, just launch it and gather some information because something's going on right now, instead of crying it.
It only collects on the script way, but you can look at today's data just by saying SAR and then one of the options.
As long as it's been running today, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So like if you set your cron up for every 2 minutes, like if you just installed it and you set your cron up to collect data every 2 minutes,
sure.
Then in 10 minutes, you'll have 10 data points. I mean, 5 data points.
Oh, okay. Can you send me that line, that 2-minute line?
I'll send you the whole.
Can you put it in the chat?
Yep. This is the whole cron tab for sysstat that we use at work. That's not right.
Well, he does that.
is it only showing you the last
time? Oh, shit. No, it's Google Docs, and I forget that you can't use the mouse to copy and paste with Google Docs.
You can't?
Not in
you
Firefox.
Can't? Well, then why don't you use Chrome?
Because I'm on my work laptop, and I segregate
They don't let you install Chrome?
It's installed, but I separate my work environments. On my work laptop, my work stuff's on Chrome, and my personal stuff's on Firefox.
Why don't you put Chromium in there and do something with that?
Because Chromium sucks. I don't use it.
All right, while you do that, I'm going to just make a little announcement, that episode 15 of BSD Now was just released, and it is focused on NAS, kicking NAS, they said. So I'm going to... I'll be listening to that, because I think I mentioned I wanted to build a NAS server.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, there.
Ready?
It pasted it twice, and I didn't, because I didn't see it pasted.
Oh, time. Okay. Sorry. All right, go ahead.
All right, so that's the whole cron tab. And you would change that 10 in the line there, Tony, to a 2 to collect that every 2 minutes.
Excellent.
And... this is a binary file and cannot be viewed with a text editor. You can pass SA1 two parameters, an interval and a count, which means, like in the cron tab above, it's running it, 1-1, which means at a 1 second interval, one time.
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand what that means? That means collect all the data once for 1 second.
Okay.
Or every 1 second. Once every 1 second.
Sure. So every second you're going to collect data?
No. Every 10 minutes, 1 second.
So just collect it for 1 second this one time.
Right.
Because otherwise, if you had one 3, it'd be collect every 1 second
three times.
Great.
I think you have to see the command, Mary. Because at the 10-minute mark.
I was looking at my BSD stuff.
Grab 1 second of data.
That's it makes perfect sense now.
And that'll put what you need in the chat for the line for 2 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah, I got that part. Thank
every
you, Dottler.
10 minutes is standard, so...
I don't know what that's what we do at work.
Okay.
10 minutes is what we do at work. Maybe we just use the standard, but
that makes sense.
So
all right, I'm riveted. So keep going.
Yeah, right. Don't bust my balls.
All right.
Okay, and the second one runs in the 53rd minute of the 23rd hour of the day. That's the way we have it set up, and it creates a daily summary. The SA2 script creates a file called SARXX in Varlog SA. Where XX is the day of the month. This differs from the SAXX file in that it is plain text and can be read with a text editor. So you can view the daily summary with just a text editor, like you can open it in Vi or whatever, mm-hmm. and view the summary.
Vim.
And view the summary, but you can't view the data collection once, the every 10 minutes throughout the day.
Mm.
You have to view those with SAR.
Okay.
So now let's look at the first line that SAR always outputs. It will be something like this. Yours will be slightly different as you are running it on a different machine. On the machine I used, it's Linux 2.6.32-358.18.1.el6.x64x86_64. Foo.com, because I obfuscated, obviously, the real server name.
Foo's a good one, right?
Yeah.
Foo.bar.
Yeah. Oh, that's what I should have done, Foo.bar. I didn't even think of that. and then the date that it was run, 12/11/2013, and then the processor, and then how many CPUs. So I must have ran this first line on a different machine because all my examples say 16 CPUs, and this first line says 24 CPUs. So I ran it on a different machine. So let's break that down. The first part, the Linux 2.whatever, is the Linux kernel version of the machine. Foo.com is the host name of the machine where the SAR data was collected, then the date it was run, and then the machine's architecture, and then how many CPUs. So, let's look at some examples of the kinds of statistics you can generate with SAR. First up, we have some processor information gathered with SAR-U13. And this gives you the information 3 times over 1 second intervals. So, and the -U collects all of the CPUs. So, it says, like, the columns are percent user, percent nice, percent system, percent IO8, percent steal, and percent idle. And the ones I find important are the user, system, and idle. And as long as your idle number is fairly large, you're okay, because that means it's not really being taxed. But if your idle number starts dropping down into like 10 and 15%, then it's under a pretty heavy load. And then you'll look and see whether that's user jobs that are causing it or system jobs that are causing it, and it helps you track it down.
Good.
The U is supposed to display the CPU information. However, I can not find a machine or a version that does not display the same information with SAR or SAR-U. The only time I find the -U flag necessary is when using the additional all flag. Just in case it is me, I will continue to use the -U when getting CPU info. To get statistics on individual CPUs in the machine, use the -P flag in conjunction with the all flag, and it will generate statistics for all of the processor cores individually. So, like, my example then had 16 cores in it, which I chopped the middle 8 out. But it had 16 cores in it and showed me what was happening with each core. Like that one was 100% idle. Nothing was using it at all. That one was 100% idle. And then it shows you the average for the three, for I think I only collected one. Yeah, one. So it's the average of the one time I collected it. But what the average tells you then...
What was that average?
It was the same as the one. But if, say, I had done 1-3, then it would have been an average of three different collections.
Yeah.
Okay.
The machine I'm using for my example has 16 cores, so I'm chopping out the middle 8 to make it easier to read. You can also get the stats for an individual processor by using a number between 0 and the total number of cores instead of the all flag. So you would issue something like SAR-P111, and then that will tell you what's going on with the second core. And it's the second core because we start with 0, because this is computers.
Right. That's right.
Speaking of, that gives me a funny anecdote. We had to replace a drive at our British data center.
Yeah.
And we told the guy to replace the third drive. Because 0, 1, 2, 3, it would be the fourth one in the system.
Right.
He counted 1, 2, 3 and yanked the third drive. Since the fourth drive was part of the same array and also bad, the whole machine went down.
Oh.
Well, I think it was really whoever told him to do the fourth drive.
No, the third drive.
Or the third drive.
He told him to do the third
drive. It says they're numbered on the machine. 0, 1, 2, 3,
but did you say the third or did you say drive three?
Drive three is what he said.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, because if he said the third drive...
No.
The tendency is
he said drive three.
Okay. Oh.
Yeah. That's you got to pay attention.
Yep. Anyway, back from our anecdote. So, and this gives you the statistics for the second CPU because we start counting at 0. I already said that. The next one generates the memory stats. So, SAR-R is going to generate memory stats. And all of the columns here are pretty self-explanatory, except for the two commit columns. Because the columns are KBMemFree, KBMemUsed, %MemUsed, KBBuffers, KBCached, and then KBCommit and %Commit. And the commit columns represent the amount of memory needed for the currently running processes.
Mm-hmm.
So in order for the processes that are currently running to do their job, that's how much memory they need, kilobytes and percentage.
I can see how that'd be very helpful. Mm-hmm.
So.
There's no H flag to make a human readable?
No. It's kind of human readable. It's in kilobytes. You just have to do some math.
Right.
Involving lots of zeros.
So then you can look at swap statistics with the SAR-S. And it's the same columns without the commit columns because there's no reason for commit columns if you're looking at swap. But it's the same basic columns except for looking at swap.
Mm-hmm.
And if KB swap used and percent swap used, KB swap used are both at 0, then you're not swapping. So for additional memory information.
That's what I was thinking.
For additional memory information, you can use SAR-R, and this will identify the number of memory pages freed, used, and cached per second by the system. And then you can use SAR-H to identify huge pages. But this is only available after 9.1.6. So it wasn't I couldn't use it on the server I was using for my examples.
And KB then, hug?
I'm sorry?
KB hug free? That's what it says.
Yeah, huge.
Huge. Oh.
That sounded kind of nice and friendly.
Yeah. And then there's SAR-B to generate paging statistics. And then there's SAR-W, which will generate the swap page statistics. Now for some I.O. stats. You would use SAR-B to get your I.O. stats. And the fields are TPS, RTPS, WTPS, BREADS, and BWRTNS. So what those fields mean are TPS is the total transaction per second, which is the sum of both your reads and your writes. then RTPS is your reads per second, WTPS is your writes per second, and the bread slash S is going to be bytes read per second, and the B written is going to be bytes written per second. And Dowdle, it was not an anecdote.
I saw, you know, it's that funny.
It's
chuckle.
Be read. Looks like bread.
Yeah, I know. And you can use SAR-lowercase v to show the number of inode handlers, file handlers, and pseudo terminals in use by the system. Now, let's look at the run queue and load average. So you do that with SAR-lowercase q, and the columns there are run q-sc, plist-sc, and then the 1 minute average, 5 minute average, and 15 minute average. So the run queue is what it sounds like. That's the run queue. plist, I'm not sure. Let's just check the man page really quick.
All right.
And we'll look that up, and we'll see what is the number of tasks in the task list. That's what plist is.
Okay.
So, and lastly, when looking at the historic data, you can specify a start time with the dash S. Oh, yeah, because all of these can be used to look at the historical data, too. If you add the dash F flag and then tell it one of the files to use that it's already written. Like, you can look at yesterday, the day before yesterday, by giving it the day of the month.
Mm-hmm.
So you would look at yesterday by doing var log SA, like 12, and that'll look at the 12th day.
Not the 12th month.
No, the 12th day. F you, Mary. To show the load average on the 10th day of the month from 10 a.m., use the dash Q and dash S option as shown below. Well, I'm going to read it. So it's SAR dash Q dash F and then slash var slash log slash SA slash SA 10 space dash S 10:00:01. And that'll show you the statistics for that whole day, starting at 10 a.m. and then going through the whole day. While there's not an option to set the end time, you can accomplish this with the use of the head command. So if you wanted to start at 10 a.m. and see the first 7 entries, you would pipe the command I just said to head-n10. And you have to use 10 to see the top 7, because the first line is the system information, the second line is blank, and the third line is the headers.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yep.
So you always have to add 3 to the number of lines of data you want to actually see.
What? All right. Can you give me that command one more time?
Which one?
There were so many.
The one you put in before head.
I will put it in the chat.
Okay. And all these notes are going in the show notes,
yes,
right?
Yes. My whole thing will be in the show notes.
I appreciate you putting in show notes this week, Matt.
Yeah, and I'm actually going to try and go back and put them all in that I haven't been doing for quite some time. So, and that's basically it. That's a quick and dirty how to use SAR for your system monitoring.
So you said dirty, SA, but it wasn't quick.
SA 10 means for the 10th day of the month?
Yeah.
So today's the...
Yeah, you won't have any files.
No, it's been running for...
Doesn't matter.
15 minutes. Why not?
Because you'll have today's current file, but you won't have any historic files.
But if I run it for the 13th...
You can try it, but I don't think it'll work. I don't think that file is written as the 13th.
Yeah, cannot open.
Yeah.
So how do you... What is the command for run today?
You just don't give it any date.
So I just say dash S and then the time?
Yeah. You don't give it a file. You don't use the dash F in the file is what you... And then it'll do today's current.
It says, please check if data collection is enabled in the ETC default sysdat.
This is the situation that I spoke of last week when you try to do a demo and then you try to do it in real life. It doesn't work. This is exactly
all I know is that it works when you're looking at historic files. I never tried to use the dash S for and give it a time
mm-hmm.
on the current day's file. I never tried that.
But Tony is. How's it going over there?
Yeah, because most of the time when you're using SAR, mm-hmm. I'm trying to figure out what happened like yesterday on the server. Okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It says enabled equals false. So I need to make that true?
Yes.
Was that in like the first minute of you talking?
I didn't say that.
Yeah, and this is Nano. All
right. I like Nano.
Okay.
Where did it say?
It was in the etc default sysdat folder or file. And that's where you have to say true to enable data collecting.
I thought if you just put the cron job in it, enabled it. I may have to go back and edit my presentation.
And rewrite your notes.
Well, I did a different. I guess I just did an irregular cron tab. I didn't create a separate folder or file for the sysdat cron.
Oh.
I don't know if that makes a difference.
I don't know. We always, for all of our different things we do at work, we create their own cron tab.
Yeah.
And we do that under cron D.
Okay.
So you can...
I just did it under the root cron tab.
Yeah. So.
Cool.
I don't know how often that's run.
Okay. Yeah. You got more for us, Matt?
No, that's it.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Mary and I are going to be trading off. So next week she'll have a distro review, and then the week after that I'll have a different tool
mm-hmm.
that we use at work, and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the Debian one has a lot more options in it.
Of course.
The Ubuntu one only has whether it's enabled or not.
Mm-hmm.
The Debian one has a lot more.
A lot more. Where's that folder located? Do I even have that folder on Fedora?
I'm feeling left out because I don't think I have this on my BSD. No, actually, BSD does have one.
What was that folder?
It has one more. It's etc default.
Default is a directory.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and then the file is sysdat. So if you vi etc slash yep. etc slash
I,
default
but
slash
I had two
sysdat.
Eyes. I had two eyes in my Vim. That wouldn't have worked.
There's
you
a
know,
joke in there somewhere. I should try to find it.
Did you know that most vi nowadays is alias to Vim?
Yes. Like if you type vi, you're actually getting Vim.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I have that file, but it's empty. No, I don't. It says new file. So,
So Debian and Ubuntu puts
so
in
Fedora
a sample.
Don't use, so Fedora
they don't use
doesn't,
it.
And probably Red Hat and CentOS don't use that file.
Hmm. Interesting. And if you edit it, make sure you're root.
Sudo bang bang.
Yep. And Dowd was saying, make sure I change it, because it's not going to bring up anything from the 10th. And that's right. I'd set it for the 13th.
All right.
Did you see what he said?
He says installing it will include
the dev package probably splats a cron file in there for you, and then you just turn it on and off with that conf file.
Oh.
Nice.
Yeah.
Debian, Matt.
I used to use Debian.
I know you did. Don't you hear the call of the Debian?
Don't use what file? What?
All right, well, we probably should.
Moving on.
That's right. Okay, well, Matt, again, thank you very much for that server tool review this week.
You're welcome.
We have to figure out a name for that segment.
Yeah.
Can we call it Toolbox?
We can. But the Toolbox goes after the news.
Yeah.
Oh.
So we should have it something else because we're alternating.
We can call it the Toolbox, but it'll go after the news.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway.
It's time for the tech news of the week.
So, all right. Well, Matt, so you got any? I bet you spent all week working on your server, right?
I did. I just knew that. I do not have any news.
That's all right. But news continued to happen despite the fact you didn't catch it. That's okay.
I'm sure it did.
You were busy. I've got a few. Let me share with you a couple of things that I saw. And one of those happens to be, I have way too many browser tabs open. Did you see I don't know if you're a fan of the Free Software Foundation.
Yes, I like the Free Software Foundation.
All right. Which one is the one that Richard Stallman belongs to?
Is that Richard Stallman? No, I am not a fan of the Free Software Foundation. I take that back.
Oh my God, only because of one guy?
Yes.
Come on, Matt.
One idiot.
He's not an idiot.
He is an idiot.
All right, well, I am going to say this.
Foot junk eating idiot.
Okay. Tony, I would get a time hack of that and cut that out. But anyway, I was going to mention, because this was posted on some site, and it caught my attention. I just thought it warranted a mention. And it was a response that they made to Microsoft's privacy and encryption announcement.
Oh.
And what I really liked about the way that the Free Software Foundation approached it is they just cut right to the chase. They just said, I mean, they opened it up. And they said here, Microsoft has made renewed security promises before. In the end, these promises are meaningless. That's how they opened up their statement, which I thought was pretty funny. And these, I think it was about protecting customer data from government snooping. You know how Microsoft has kind of gotten on this high horse lately. Have you seen that site, Scroogled? I think you've seen it, right?
No.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, I've heard of it.
Scroogled.com?
Mm-mm.
Scroogled.com is a Microsoft, I'm pretty sure it's a Microsoft site, but it's a site that they made to differentiate themselves from Google with respect to customer privacy and other elements where they believe
what?
They have a...
Microsoft is advocating customer privacy?
Yes. Right. Okay, there we go.
Why do I have a naked woman on my screen,
Mary? I don't know, but I'll look the other way.
In a live video feed of another naked woman or semi-naked
woman.
Are
you sure that's Scroogled?
I said www.scroogled.com.
Scroogled.
Google. It's not what you said.
Well,
I want to see what you're looking at, Matt.
This is a much different website.
There we go. Yeah, and this began.
Thanks for getting that NSF stuff on my freaking work laptop, Mary.
I don't know how that happened. I had nothing to do with it. But anyway, they set this site up so that they could then tout how customer-centric they are and how they're really taking care of customers and how Google's not. And one aspect of it was this customer data privacy, these comments and that activity. The other one is this Chromebook thing, which I watched.
Yeah, I've seen that video.
God, because I guess in the original Chromebooks, if you weren't connected to the internet, you didn't have access to your documents.
No.
But I think they fixed it. Google, very smartly, As opposed to Microsoft, which took forever to fix their stuff.
Yeah.
So, but they don't say that on that Scroogled site. But anyway, getting back to my original little news item, I just appreciated the fact that the FSF just cut to the chase in their comment. And in the end, these things are meaningless, meaning Microsoft's pronouncements. So, anyway, I've got another one here. I was going to mention, Nokia, and I think Microsoft. Microsoft didn't really acquire them. I think, don't they have some kind of very close-knit relationship?
No, Microsoft.
They did acquire
Nokia.
Them? Yes. Did you see that this past week that the European Union warned Nokia, aka Microsoft, to not become a patent troll? Because Nokia has, apparently they've got quite a few, they've got quite a nice, robust patent portfolio because, you know, they've been in the cell phone business for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
Tony, I am so sorry. I have my, my chair just goes toward Matt. I'm
That's
sorry.
That's because I'm such a magnetic personality.
Yeah, apparently. Apparently. But anyway, I'll look at you too.
It's all right.
But yeah, so, so of course now Microsoft is, they're able now to get their hands on all these patents and everything. And so, of course, the European Union, knowing Microsoft's reputation, has said, be very careful and don't become a troll. So I thought that was a little on the humorous side, so I wanted to mention that. I had another one here, and this one was from Stephen J. Von Nichols. And it actually, this kind of covers something that we've talked about in the last few weeks, and that's Linux virtualization, although I think we talked about containers, but, you know, there is a difference, of course, as we've,
right.
as we've mentioned. And, you know, Linux has, according to the article, Linux has many hypervisors. You've got Xen, and it's supported by many more, like, I think Microsoft, I think it supports some Linux virtualization. But what IBM is going to be doing is taking the kernel-based virtual machine, which I think heretofore has only worked on Intel and AMD processors, and they're going to take it and port it, if that's the best way to say it, to its power architecture. So It's kind of nice that they're going to be doing this, I think, and getting that virtualization capability. Ooh, Matt's got a look on his face like he's going to ask me a question. Be very afraid, Mary. But anyway, I guess the timing is supposed to be sometime in 2014. But I thought it was kind of interesting that they're taking that. And I didn't have enough time to really look into the fact whether it's anything that VMware should be nervous about. But I thought it was kind of interesting that IBM is going to be doing that. So. I wanted to share that little bit of news. And I also have, if I can get back to my little news list here. let's see. Oh, yes. You know, there was a site, and I was unaware of it, but it's a site that apparently monitors the server market. And they noted that Unix and IBM is losing ground. What are you laughing at?
DOD dummies comment in the chat.
Oh, okay. All right. But anyway, I wanted to mention that the ServerWatch site monitors the presence, or at least the percent of the market that various server platforms have, like Unix, Linux, you know, the various Microsoft offerings. And that Unix is continuing to decline.
Yeah. And because those old Unix installs are all getting swallowed up by Linux installs.
But there's a site there where you can, using a series of drop downs, you can basically customize what you want to see from that site, and then click the button, and up comes your data. So I'm sure they've got a nice maybe MariaDB in the background there serving that up. So I like that. And then I've got a couple of things. I was slapped verbally last week when I tried to slide my KDE corner in before the end of the news. So that's all I have for my news. Okay, Tony, over to you.
Did I really?
Yes,
you did.
Oh, no.
See? You stomped on it pretty hard.
You did.
Oh, well, I'm sorry.
I cried all the way home. I did not. I'm just joking. But I remembered. So does that mean I get to go right into
your KDE corner?
All right. Well, what's going on in the KDE? Well, first of all, we have our announcement to make that next week, a week from tomorrow, we are going to be at Atwater Brewery. For the KDE release party for 4.12.
That's right.
Which is coming out, I think, this Wednesday. Remember last time, or a couple, was it 10 or 11, where were you there the day of the release?
Yeah.
It's like midweek. And
we decided that it's best if we do them on Saturdays.
Yeah. So I think we were talking about 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
You know, and now the Detroit's get that touristy buzz. Did you see that from Fedora's website?
From whose website?
Fedora. They're the big travel website company.
Oh, no. Frommer's?
Fedora's? No, this is Fedora's.
Fedora's?
Yeah. That's not Frommer. That's the dance guy, isn't it?
No, Frommer, the Frommer guys. Like, you get the Frommer books.
Fedors.
Frommers?
Fedors.
I never heard of Fedors. Frommers?
Maybe I made it up. Anyway, I was trying to share a little good Detroit stuff, because Detroit's apparently got a big tourist buzz going. People want to come here and see Detroit. So.
Yeah, all that ruined porn.
No.
Did you see, though, the Heisenberg Project? I've always been a fan of the Heisenberg.
Heidelberg.
The Heidelberg Project.
You're thinking of the fedora release.
Yeah. No, somebody's burning it down house by house.
Well, yeah, I know, but some people may not know what this is. This is a...
Yeah, I don't know what it is.
This is a... it's probably about a 20-year-old art project that started on Heidelberg Street. And what this guy has done is he's taken found objects, and he's basically fastened them to houses.
Yeah, like last week, somebody burnt the penny house down.
It had pennies all over it. So they burnt that down. So it's like each house, they've burned like seven houses
down.
The teddy bear house is one of them,
I've seen that one.
The House of Soul, which had all different soul, you know, vinyl records and from the Motown greats.
Yeah.
That one burnt. But anyway, they had mentioned Fedor's review had mentioned the Heidelberg Project, and the journalist for the Detroit Free Press said apparently they didn't hear about the recent fires.
Yeah,
which is kind of
bad. Like half of it's burnt down now.
I know they're going to call it the Hindenburg Project. That's a terrible joke.
It was funny though.
No, but seriously though, it's a terrible thing that's happened.
It is
because
it was one of the parts of Detroit. 700,000, no, not 700,000.
Yeah.
Was it 700,000
people? Over the course of,
of a year, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, would come to visit that.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't been down there for a few years.
It's one of Detroit's biggest attractions.
Well, I would say the DIA is its biggest attraction. Well, one of, okay.
I did say one of. Hey, speaking of Detroit attractions, though, did you hear about the DSO?
No.
Oh.
That's
the Detroit Symphony Orchestra?
Yeah. They're doing all their concerts
online. Their instruments
online.
Got stolen? No.
They're doing all their concerts online, and they're getting a huge following of people from all these other countries watching and now contributing.
Oh,
they're actually breaking even now.
Wow.
Remember 2011, they were having all that financial problem?
Yeah.
Well, now they broke even this year.
Really?
Yeah, because all these people, like, from Norway and Japan.
How did I miss that?
I don't know.
And, man, you knew about that.
Hi.
That's pretty cool. Thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome.
All right, we're going on to the KDE Corner.
All right. Now that we're done with our Detroit update.
for none of you who are interested.
Exactly.
All right. Well, the first thing on the KDE Corner is that apparently there is a maintainer needed for caffeine.
I'll maintain it.
I'm speaking of that. We're going to diverge yet again. But it's relevant. There was Google Plus, and I don't know who it was, if it was Claudio, Miranda, or somebody, had posted this picture of a cup of coffee, or at least a coffee mug, that said that... something about successfully installing Java.
That was very funny.
That was pretty funny. But anyway, but seriously though, there is some love and maintenance needed for caffeine. So if anybody out there who's listening, who has the wherewithal and knowledge, wants to jump on board that project and help maintain it, that would be great.
What's the Caffeine Project again?
Caffeine is a media.
Yeah.
It's a media player.
Yeah. KDE's media player.
Yeah. Starts with a K.
All right.
I wanted to mention that. With the release of KDE 4.12, upcoming release of Dolphin is going to contain a whole bunch of improvements. And so
Dolphin's pretty good as it is. What are they doing to improve it?
I don't know. Throw it in the kitchen sink. But you're right. It really is a fantastic file manager. But anyway, I'm going to post a link to Frank Reinenhaus's blog. He's the maintainer of Dolphin, and he really goes into some detail about some of the things. First of all, a brief history about Dolphin's performance and memory usage, because it used to be kind of inefficient, but over time,
When it first came out, I used to continue to use Conqueror instead.
Yep. So. I loved Conqueror.
Well, Conqueror, you can do SSF. SSHFS right in the bar.
Yeah, with their, what is it, KIO slaves? KIO slaves?
KIO slave?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's, those are the, it's a protocol that KDE has where you can do that kind of thing. I think you could even do SCP, you can do fish, you can do a bunch of things.
Fish, too.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so anyway, so that'll be in there. One other thing I want to mention for anyone who uses KDE and uses the Plasma desktop, there's a KDE shutdown widget that's available where you can then specify when you want your machine to shut down. So if you're in the midst of an upgrade and you've got to step away but you want your machine to shut down, hopefully after the upgrade completes, you can just say, hey, in an hour and 45 minutes from now, I want you to shut the machine down. So that's kind of nice. Because I don't know, I mean, based on what I've seen right now, I don't think that capability exists. So this little Plasma widget is going to provide it. So, and that, ladies, well, there's no ladies here except for me, but that gentleman is this week's KDE Corner.
All right.
All right.
Yeah. So, yeah, caffeine is the player. Yep. Yeah. Hey, Caden Live, did you see that there was some...
And KDE and Live is not a KDE project.
Oh, I forgot about that. Thanks for reminding me.
What?
He's snarking you.
Why?
Because you said KDE and Live is not a KDE project.
Yeah, you said that last time.
So I'm glad you told me. I forgot all about that.
I don't get it.
He is giving you a hard time.
I don't understand.
You.
Oh, no, he's giving you a hard time. And I'm stuck in between them. Okay. All right. I'd get another beer, except I got to leave in a little while, so I probably shouldn't start drinking. But I wanted to, on a slightly more serious note, though, I wanted to mention that I had read some blog postings recently that the maintainer of KDE Live, has vanished or has basically not posted any updates since July. So they were kind of wondering if
the maintainership's up for grabs.
Yeah, they're just.
Is he dead? Did he fall in a hole?
They don't know. They can't find him.
Is he in a coma somewhere?
I don't know, man. Inquiring minds want to know. So anyway, but that I meant to mention that last week when I'd heard about this recently. So. Yeah, so hopefully nothing has happened to him, and that the project will continue, because I do like KDE and Live. It's a, or Caden Live, however you'd like to pronounce it, because it's a nice, efficient little video editor. I've made a couple of YouTube videos using it. So one was a trip to my trip to the dentist when I passed a Google Maps car, and then I saw a Chevy Volt. That was when they were kind of uncommon. So
they're still uncommon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, all right. I do want an official Dattle. So, did you see that?
Yes,
in the chat?
I see it. I'm ignoring Dattle.
Official part of KDE. Either. Oh, that's pretty funny. All right. Well,
hey, Tony, do you know KDE and Live? Not a KDE project.
Oh, I forgot about that.
All right, well, we'll get our buggy back on the road here. Normally, this is the time in the show where I have Is It Alive?
Yes.
I'm preparing a special Christmas Is It Alive next week. It's a twist week. So it's going to be a wicked vicious twist.
All right.
No, it's going to be a fun twist, actually. So
I prefer wicked vicious.
Okay. In this holiday spirit, it'll be a wicked vicious holiday twist. It will be, too, actually. So. But yeah, well, so we'll have that next week. And when are we recording next week?
Thursday night.
Yeah, because he put that schedule out that looks like
the one that I didn't read.
But Tony, this week on it because it was for the 14th, and there was a conversation. I missed it. So.
I still think tonight's Thursday. So. All right.
You know, I did find some security stuff. So I wanted to mention that.
All right. We're on to Tony's security section of the show.
Right. And SSS. I actually heard about this from NPR. I subscribe to their tech podcast, and it's all their, like, tech...
All tech considered.
It isn't, though. It includes All Tech Considered.
Okay.
But it's other shows that they have. They have a tech section.
Oh, really?
So it's one cast that has like all their tech sections.
I didn't know they had other tech stuff. I thought their only tech stuff was All Tech Considered.
There's usually like five different stories they talk about.
That's a great little thing in and of itself.
Half the time they're all talking about the same story. it's pretty cool. And they were talking about security and about apps that you can run on your phone for secure communication, and that how Facebook, everybody knows everything's logged and it's not secure, and anybody can go back look at what you were chatting about. Like, and they were talking about this app that teenagers have been using on their phones, and it was called Snapshot, and it's a messaging application that you can send a message and then put a timeout on it, so it only lasts for so long and then it disappears. So you can put like a 2-minute timeout, and then when you send it to your friend, they can read it, and then it disappears, and then nobody logs it. And so, but they went through, and some of the other security people looked at it and said, it's really not that secure. Yeah, it times out, but it's still logged somewhere, and it floats around the internet.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a couple other ones they talked about, and one was called Wicker. And this one, some of the security analysts went through and they looked at it, and they couldn't find a way to retrieve old messages.
To use it? No, just kidding. Yeah?
And it's been around for a couple of years. Okay. So I installed it on my phone, Mary installed it, and we haven't been able to communicate.
but in its defense, I use Sprint, so that, I should...
Sprint's the best.
It looks horrible. Pretty cool. There's
horrible.
Blacklist.
Yeah, I'm doing a mad. It's horrible!
What we may have to do is look at whether, what the blacklist and the whitelist is.
Yeah.
Whether, if you have a whitelist set up, then it's going to block you from anybody.
It uses NFC. You weren't close enough.
No. That's what it was.
Or if you use blacklist, it means you block specific people. Where if you have whitelist set up, then you only allow certain people. So if Mary, if you have a whitelist set up and I'm not in it, then that would be one reason why we're not communicating. But they
say... I'm having trouble remembering my password. That could be another reason.
They say that they're a military-grade encryption for text, pictures, audio, video, and PDF.
Wait a minute, I think it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Or 0000000.
Yeah, that one too.
Did you guys hear about that?
No.
No.
The launch codes for 20 years.
Oh my god, launch codes, I hate...
They were all zeros for 20 years.
What?
Who's launch codes for what?
For
nuclear missiles.
Yeah. And apparently...
That can't be the Air Force, was it?
Apparently there was a mandate that there had to be a code for the launch and a code for arming the warheads. And one of the persons, I didn't read the whole story, but I heard it from people talking. One of the guys, I think it was the head of one of the agencies, said, that's too complicated. So after everything was okayed, like the president signed off on it, then they changed the codes to 0000000. So.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Now they said that's just the launch code. It's not
right
it's
to
not
arm
the,
it. It's
to arm it is still a real code. Then they have like keys you have to turn and blah blah blah.
Okay, I just sent you a message.
Ooh.
Did you get it?
Let me see. I did. Yeah, we're communicating now.
Ooh.
All right.
Tap to
Let's
unlock.
Talk about Matt. It says,
you guys do that all the time anyway.
It says,
and you don't use
hello.
Messaging.
Yeah.
And it will only be there for 5 hours. Did you see what you can set?
No.
I can add you as a contact.
Oh, do. Okay, well, this is, I couldn't, when we had bigger problems yesterday, so this never really even got tested. But so in order to make it work, of course, you've got to convince other people to put Wicker on there. And so so the messages go through some external server someplace to find you on the Wicker network or whatever. Is that right? But they're allegedly encrypted at this end and then decrypted off of your system. Is that the deal?
Yep. It's on the
okay
on your phone itself where it does it. And like I said, it has military-grade encryption. It does...
I don't feel so good about military-grade encryption after the NSA.
Sender-based control of who can read it and how long it lasts. It uses quite a few different encryptions available.
Mm-hmm.
You can integrate it with Dropbox, Box, and Google Drive.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so it's WICKR.
Uh-huh. Yep, and it worked really well. I mean, you got that fairly quickly after I sent it to you.
Yeah, and I tried sending it to you.
Because now you're in the same room. I told you, it uses NFC.
NFC?
Near field communication.
Oh. I thought that was some trick. All right, so are you sending me something? Or did you already? Because I didn't get it.
This app
that I installed, it was called Bump. Did you ever hear of it?
No.
You basically, what you do is you bump a phone and it goes from your phone to theirs. I think it uses NFC. Yeah, that for sure does when you describe that. Because I think you have to have vibrate on your phone, and so it recognizes, hey, something just happened, and oh, I've got a message here, so here it goes, and that type of thing.
Yeah, cool. You're right. That is NFC.
Mm-hmm.
And I just responded to that.
Oh, did you?
Yep. And I set a timer.
Oh, look. There it is.
So now you have to click it to unlock.
All right.
And it says, okay. And now you see the timeout, time countdown?
Yeah, it's 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Mary's message was for 5 hours.
Five days?
Yeah. So well, I put
is
it,
that the default? Is that what it does?
Yeah, default is 5 days.
Okay.
And so I heard the one of the security analysts that they were talking to.
If Patrick had that, we would not have had
the trial we had.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
But one of the security analysts said that they have used it for talking to a distance and stuff,
mm-hmm.
Overseas and...
Sure.
Because it's point-to-point communication encrypted, and
mm-hmm.
And then it disappears. So it's, I thought it's really cool for
gonna,
something
gonna
if you want.
I'm going to watch this thing go away. It'll,
yeah,
it'll
let's
go
see.
In a few
we
minutes
have,
here. Yeah.
Well, we have a minute and a half left.
Yeah. So.
Oh, we got chat going on in there.
Yes.
But while we're waiting for that, there was one other thing I found is Twitter is going to start using perfect forward secrecy.
Dattle says NFCs. Not for communists.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, that's funny.
Anyway, have you guys heard of forward secrecy?
Forward? No.
Right. It's a way to encrypt your HTTPS connection,
mm-hmm.
Where it uses one-time keys for each session. And after that session is done,
keys?
And then it throws away.
Oh, okay.
That way, in the past, or in the uh-huh. future, if somebody were to grab or find a key, that key's gone and they can't decrypt that session anymore.
Oh, okay.
So currently, the way that most HTTPS sessions run is that there's one key and it's held on the server, and whenever you make that communication, it's all logged and mm-hmm. it uses that key.
Do you want to film this disappearing?
And,
no, 15 seconds. All right.
But what was I saying? It uses that key,
yeah.
And then in the future, even though that key will expire, then at that point, the NSA can grab it. And
it expired.
It says expired.
Right. Yeah, we have to interrupt here. We have to end up for a news flash. The Wicker message that Tony Bemis sent to me has expired.
So it is no longer retrievable.
No, mm-hmm. But you know what it does, though? It leaves a little footprint that you sent something to me.
It does, but I wonder how long that stays, whether just for your session while you're looking
I'm
at
sure
it.
I'm sure that it stays forever, so you can say you don't get the message in time, then you can reply back to the person and say, hey, it expired.
Oh, you know
I
what?
It.
There. I just, it's gone now.
Oh, yeah.
I left it. When I left it and came back in, it disappeared.
It was gone?
Yeah, it's gone.
All right. Yeah, see, that's the whole...
Okay.
That's
wow.
good. Wow. Because even metadata, you don't want that sitting around.
Yeah, but we haven't done a forensics audit on my phone to see if it's... And we're not going to do one. So.
Anyway, back right. to this Sorry. Forward secrecy thing. So currently, what they can do is they can grab expired certificates
mm-hmm.
and then go through and decrypt old sessions. so they can grab all that metadata and figure out what's going on. The NSA.
Oh, I should have known.
The NSA, because the NSA collected all those expired keys.
Right. And at the time, everybody's well, it's expired. They don't care. You can have it. So what Perfect Forward Secrecy does is that key is then deleted so that nobody can go...
In the future, they cannot come back and try
to decrypt that session.
The downside, again, is what? By using that method? I mean, we see the obvious upside.
The downside is it takes more horsepower to run this system.
Okay.
So you have to have some pretty good servers. Mm-hmm. And it's not as common yet. So Twitter is going to start using it. I heard Google was looking at it, but I don't know if they're going to start using it yet.
Yeah.
And then I heard that Microsoft was going to use it too. Not that it matters. But anyway, those are the two things I found this week I thought were interesting.
Yeah, Tony, those are good. I mean, once we got Wicker working, yeah, it's pretty cool. I didn't know what you were. What's that?
I was looking at the reviews for Wicker.
It just varied from horrible.
It looked like there was a couple from techie people
that
said, this is awesome, I'm going to use it. And then there was a couple said, I forgot my password, and now I can't get into
it. And it sucks.
Yeah. And then
it sucks because you forgot your password?
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
What idiots. I hate users. Users definitely the bastard operator from hell when it comes to users.
Oh, anyway, that was...
Yeah, that was...
So I didn't trust any of
them. Oh, like users. We had this guy, this one customer at work. One of the other technicians sent him an email saying, it's probably a problem with your CMS. You need to update your CMS. Like, we see that you're using Joomla and Magento, and you also have to update any other CMS that you might be using. And he says his reply back was in broken English, basically, I've updated the Joomla, updated the Magento, and what is this CMS that you speak of?
Any others? Nice.
All right. Well, thanks.
It's listener feedback time.
And we have a listener feedback line, and that number is 313-626-9140.
First one, excuse me, was from... Or at least not the first one, but one of our feedbacks was from, actually it was from Arthur, and he thanked us, wanted to thank us for mentioning Super TuxCart during the show, because he's part of the development team and had been listening for our show for some time now, and he generally likes it as long as the audio quality is good. We agree.
I'm sorry.
I think we got, Tony, I'm very sorry. I didn't mean it. Challenges trying to get all those moving parts working together. But anyway, he also, I kind of joked about the motion sickness because, I mean, sometimes if you focus on a game and there's a lot of motion in the game, I don't know about you, but sometimes it's like,
I don't play games.
Okay. Oh, that's right. You said that before.
Right.
But anyway, I don't a lot. I don't want you to think I'm like a gamer.
I know what you're talking about, though, Mary.
I got into my Steam account, though. It took me months. I finally got it in there. So, yeah.
I know what you're talking about. I ran a N64 mm-hmm. emulator, and there was just something weird with the refresh that it made me sick.
Yeah. But anyway, so he was talking about the camera code, or the angles, and about they want to rewrite the camera code, but they have more important things to do, which certainly is understandable. But I actually didn't get that sick or anything. It was just sometimes you can just kind of tell.
Right.
But he also put out a little call, and I want to pass this along, that anyone who wants to help them out, to contact them via their website. And we'll put a link to that in the show notes. So it contains links to their forum, mailing list, and the IRC channel. So I want to just mention that to the Super TuxCart, because I do like that game. I have to admit I've crashed a few times.
Never played it. Don't know what it is.
Oh, you're driving.
I've used it a few times.
You get to be a little character.
Like Mario Kart.
I don't know what that is.
Huh.
It's little go-karts that you drive around the track.
Yeah, you drive them around.
Like a racing kind of a game.
Yeah, then you're kind of racing against the computer. I mean, there's some of the other ones that are automated, and you're racing against them. And then there are things that cause you to slip, the banana peels and stuff. So, anyway.
Right.
So that was from Arthur.
And then in the same show, Samuel also commented,
and he wants us to post links to the
our show notes
to the containers that we mentioned.
Oh, well, we were mentioning a forward show that we're going to talk about. That next week we're going to have somebody on talking about Linux
containers.
Or, containers.
Somebody
OpenBZ.
Who would that somebody be?
It's a surprise.
No, I think it's safe to say he's confirmed that he's going to be on.
Yep.
It's Scott Dowdle, isn't it?
Yes. Mr. Dowdle.
He's going to be joining us to talk all about that. You know, it's kind of funny because I never realized that Linux had them.
And that distro that uses the VZ containers as cubes, isn't it? Does it use VZ containers?
I don't think so.
It uses some kind of containers.
You saw that they came out with a beta release, and as a matter of fact, the maintainer feels so confident about it that she said to go ahead and install it. And I think I'm going to take her up on it. You know that computer I bought from you this week? I am going to go and put cubes on that thing.
Cool.
Now it's got that Broadcom chip, so I may have to, may not have wireless, but without some work. But I'll just plug in the network cable. No big deal. But yeah, I think I'll install cubes on there and just kind of. That was one of the more interesting reviews I did.
Because they put everything in those silos so that even the applications can't really talk to each other.
And even to copy and paste from one to the other on your own laptop, you have to go through this kind of double it's control C. You have to kind of do it twice and this because it's so like it leaves this one, goes over to the other one, and then drops in there. So it's definitely.
I wonder if they fixed that with the new version that they're working on.
I think it was by design.
Yeah, because everything is supposed to be totally siloed. Your web browser can't talk to your applications.
Yeah,
like your OpenOffice application that's running, and your OpenOffice application can't talk to the kernel processes that are running because everything's all siloed.
Yeah, you can have some that are designated safe domains, and they may have a browser in there, and they may have something in there. And then you've got the ones that are not designated as not safe. I mean, they may be perfectly fine, but as far as the security standpoint goes, they're not safe. So, yeah, I think I'll spend some time looking at that again, even though it's not a final release.
Right. And the reason we're talking about that is because Scott Dowdle, he also commented back. He says, no, OpenVZ is not a Linux distro.
Yeah, I know it's not a Linux distro, but I think
you thought it was last week.
No. I said there was a distro based on OpenVZ. And I think it's cubes.
Mm-hmm.
I think they use OpenVZ.
Right.
I'll do some checking. I'll report in my review next week. So, all right. And
Let's see. What else do we have on here? We have.
I have one.
Dore made a suggestion for a soundboard, so that there's an Android soundboard that we can use.
I saw that, and that was very nice.
So I am trying to. I have an old tablet. An Android tablet. It's like really old.
Okay.
It's so old it doesn't even have the Android Play store on it. Or the Google Play or it doesn't have.
What did they call it before? Before it was the Android Play.
I think it was just the store, right?
Marketplace or Market. What was it called?
Something like that.
Idea.
Google Market?
It doesn't even have that on it.
Okay.
It's so old.
Google Play. Okay.
Anyway, so I've got to figure out how to get it on there.
Oh, wow. How would you install anything then? Because that's like a package manager.
Exactly,
yeah.
That's a big problem. Well, they have their actual package manager installs, APK files.
Okay.
And so if I can download the APK file, then I can install it. It's just Google Play is like the apt where DPKG is the installer, on dedicated systems.
Right.
Anyway, so we're going to try to get that together.
Okay.
Any
other feedback?
Yep. What did you just mention, Tony? I'm sorry.
The soundboard for the Android.
Oh, yeah, and then. And then we had one from Claudio.
He says, woohoo!
Yeah, woohoo! Great review of Slackware by Mary T. Oh, he says, see, we told you that it was great.
I think it'd be kind of an interesting distro to run as a day-to-day. I'm still running BSD right now, but you never know. I'm enjoying BSD for the most part. Now, when you are done with the feedback, I want to share that little
I think that's it.
Our lug that lug posting.
We've mentioned Scott Dowdle and grunge. Did we talk about grunge?
No. What are you talking about?
Grunge Monkey, the
green
tone.
Grunge Monkey said, I'm a new listener and love the show. You made me do a double take at my desk. I have the exact same Monty Python sound as his work email notification.
Oh, that's what that thing went off last week. That was funny. It was funny because I listened to the show and I laugh sometimes. Sometimes I just crack up because there's some, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but yeah, when that part came up, I started laughing.
So sorry, Grunge Monkey, but that's also my work email notification.
Yeah.
It was funny. So, anyway, that's our feedback?
I think that's it.
Well, I was going to just quickly mention this before we wrap up the show. On the MD Mug, I only had one beer, I swear. The MD Lug mailing list, there was a question that came out yesterday from somebody.
The guy that DD'd the wrong freaking drive?
he didn't do it. A client apparently did it. They recently zeroed out their drive with this, and then he gave the command, which is basically DD, and then the import file equals slash dev zero, and then the OF equals, or output file equals dev SD. Instead of putting SDD, which is a flash drive, they accidentally put SDB as in Bravo. And
wiped the wrong drive.
He said, I'm not aware of any program that will fix this, and the pros who do this type of work are expensive. So he was soliciting any feedback, and there was something called SleuthKit. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Yeah, but that only works if you've got an existing file system. Like, if he'd only DD'd, like, the first, 1024 bits, which would make the drive look blank, but it's not really blank, so SleuthKit might work in that circumstance. But he didn't. He DD'd the whole drive.
Yeah, if they did the whole drive, they're
yeah, so it's... yeah, so... And I only wanted to mention that because... Now, I have used DD, and I'm always very careful looking at that. But I have never really... Well, this is not firsthand either, but I mean, I've never really been around when something like this has happened. So to really see a real-world situation and what happens and the ramifications. I just wanted to mention that because that just goes to show how powerful that command is and how you can screw something up really fast.
Well, that's like at work. New techs do this all the time for some reason. I don't know why. But they'll accidentally delete the dev directory. Like the most recent one that did it was one of the new guys.
How do you do that?
I don't know.
Okay.
But they RMRF the dev directory.
Wow.
It happens more often than you think. But he's like freaking out. He's going, oh my God, what do I do?
We start,
oh no, we're going to have to get a BMR started. Go run back quick and pull the network cable because it'll propagate. You got to stop it.
Oh, you guys
so
awful.
He's turning white. He looks like he's going to throw up. And then we're like, no, dude, we're effing with you. All you got to do is reboot it.
Yeah.
Rebuild the network.
Oh, I tell you.
Yeah, it's funny.
Little hazing. New employee hazing.
Oh, it's great.
Did that ever happen to you?
No, I've never deleted the dev directory.
That doesn't seem like something you would do, Matt.
And if I did, I would know that you only had to reboot the system to get it back.
But that's because there's something in place there that automatically regenerates it, or is it just automatically
regenerated? Yeah, the dev is automatically generated on every boot.
So I could delete it and...
Yeah. Well, I don't know about on BSD.
Well, yeah, no. If I were running Linux on this laptop, I could do that.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, you know, I didn't realize that.
The hardware finder.
Sure. It populates it based on what it finds.
Yeah,
All right.
Although, if you went back 20 years, I'm sure that's...
That wasn't the case then, yeah.
Yeah.
Or 10 years ago. I remember that, like, right at the point when I started is when that was kind of a new thing, and just the newer distros were including it.
Okay.
The auto find, either it found it all at install time, or the new ones had it where it found it all at boot each time.
Yeah.
Featured music of the week.
So no, I got
the song
failed.
Is disk read error.
There you go.
All right. So who is this?
Ewan.
He's Funny Mask Guy.
Funny mask guy.
Ewan there you go. Dobbins.
Oh, that's kind of interesting, though. I mean...
Mm-hmm.
So
too.
All right. So you've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This was episode 114.
Triskaidekaphilia.
That's right. Or Peggy.
Or Peggy. Take it back.
All right. This is Tony Bemis.
Matt Enders.
And Mary Tomich.
Saying have a good week. See you next week.
Linux Luddites is a show where we try out all the latest free and open source software and then decide we like the old stuff better.
More than just news and releases, we check out a wide range of Linux distros, cover your feedback, talk about obscure command line programs, discuss burning issues over a pint, and much, much more. So join me, Paddy,
and me, Joe, every 2 weeks for news, reviews, comments, and generally being grumpy at linuxluddites.com.
Linux Luddites, because not all change is progress.
Open source, Linux, computers, electronics, science, and amateur radio. We cover it all. Who are we? We are Linux in the Ham Shack, the podcast that brings you and your technology together with the power of software freedom. Drop us in your favorite podcatcher or join us every other Tuesday night. Interactive live show. Visit LHSpodcast.info for all the details, news, and information. We are Linux in the Ham Shack, and we want to open your mind.